The Week in Review with Declan Ralph, for stories you haven't heard anywhere else on the radio this week.
90.3, this is Near FM. Hi there, I'm Declan Ralph. Welcome along to The Week in Review. Now, as usual today, we take a look at the stories that affect us, but you won't have heard much about them anywhere else on the radio this week. I'll feature stories too about groups and people that you may know or are interested in. Indeed, you might even be involved with them. And of course, I'll have a look at the local stories that affect you as well. Now, if you'd like to get involved in the show, or you'd like me to feature something on the show that you're interested in, well, you can contact me right now. The text line is open. It's 087 69 44 500. That's 087 69 44 500. While the show is on the air, you can get in touch that way. Or indeed, you can get in touch at any time on Twitter, at NearFM, at Declan Ralph, hashtag Week in Review. Now, coming up shortly, the local stories with Ken. Outrage after wheelchair-friendly toilet is completely destroyed by vandals in Portmarnock. Dublin City Council holds waste collection meeting behind closed doors. A fireworks extravaganza at Malahide. The Marino Institute hosts innovative multicultural event. Clean Coasts, clever campaign, and Shells Go Back Home. Ken will reveal all in a few moments' time. Norma Sheehan has to be one of the leading, funniest and most versatile actresses in Ireland today, with a phenomenal list of credits including Bridget and Eamon, Moonboy, The Cripple of Inishman, Angela's Ashes and lots, lots more. She's now gearing up to breathe new life into the triumphant lead role of Willie Russell's iconic Shirley Valentine. Trapped in a dreary marriage and humdrum life, Shirley has resorted to having full-blown conversations with her kitchen wall. Hello, wall. Remember that? That is, until her friend asks her to go on holidays to Greece and she gets out on a humorous voyage of discovering herself all over again. And to tell us what's happening and what's in store for audiences at the Pavilion Theatre next weekend, Sarah's going to chat to Norma Sheehan in about 15 minutes' time. After that, Sarah will be back just after one to take a look at the local events taking place over the next few days. Then Joe Brady, who is a geographer and formerly head of the UCD School of Geography, Planning and Environmental Policy and Dean of Arts. He is also with Ruth McManus, a series editor of the Making of Dublin City series. In the eighth in the series, he looks at Dublin between 1970 and 1990. And there was much talk about what was needed to be done in that period, but little happened until the latter years of the 80s. When change did come, it was dramatic, and both the social geography of the city centre and its appearance were transformed in less than 5 years. Find out what happened. Ken will talk to Joe at about 1:15. We'll squeeze in some jobs and volunteering opportunities as well before we finish. I take those from the activelink.ie website, where there are literally hundreds of opportunities every week. Local stories with Ken Kilbride. Welcome back, Ken.
Indeed, yes. I had a week off last week.
Yes.
For good behaviour.
Myself and Sarah did our best to, you know, just keep things on the road. We didn't get very many puns in.
No, I'm sure it was all good.
We're depending on you to get some puns in for us this week. Now, the first story you have for us this week is about the outrage after a wheelchair-friendly toilet got completely destroyed.
So, yeah, we're talking about a new wheelchair-accessible toilet out in Portmarnock, and they were installed by Fingal County Council last summer. And they say it was destroyed in an act of vandalism, and taking to social media, Fingal County Council said that the new wheelchair-accessible toilet at Stranmill Road in Portmarnock was completely destroyed during the week. And the toilets were, as I say, installed 2021, considerable cost, and they, it literally was burnt to ground. I was having a look at the pictures. So they have three together, and one of them is just, you know, a shell. It's gone. And I'm saying, you know, Fingal County Council condemns the vandalism and asks me for information to please pass it on to the Garda. And again, in looking at the pictures, you know, now this is probably just myself, I wouldn't have a clue how to burn down one of these shelters.
Yeah.
Someone, you know,
there's
came
not a
along.
Lot of compostable material.
There's no compostable materials in these things.
Yeah.
So, you know.
It's a difficult one. But
it's a difficult one, yeah. Why and how?
Why is the main question I would ask. I mean, how? I'm sure they figure it out, but why is just unbelievable. Who knows why? Now, Dublin City Council holds a waste collection meeting behind closed doors. Why is it okay?
That's the interesting question on this one. So what they're doing is they're trying to examine ways of returning waste collection service to Dublin City Council. So the meeting of the remunicipalisation, that's a new word for me, of the Waste Collection Service Subcommittee was considering an interim feasibility report. However, the subcommittee decided to have a closed meeting and not to release the report. And the council meeting says they can do it under Order Standing 39, which says if it's desirable to do so, or under Standing Order Number 40, which says it's confidential information. So the subcommittee is a part of the Climate Climate Action, Environment and Energy Special Purpose Committee. And they received their report from the Institute of Public Administration. And in terms of reference, the IPA was asked to compare Dublin City Council's waste collection, which is privatised and involves side-by-side competition, which is different from European other cities where there's only one provider. Among the issues to be examined were the carbon emissions and the traffic congestion caused by having extra trucks on the road, the cost and quality of customer service, workers' pay and conditions, and the levels of illegal dumping. The IPA was also asked to examine the legal context and the legislative steps necessary to do this. Now, Sinn Féin councillor Dáithí Dúlan, who's the chair of the committee, said, the report is in draft form, so we decided not to make it public until the report is endorsed by the full SPC. This is best practice. In other words, when we figure out what we're doing, we'll let you know. Waste collection in Dublin City was privatised at the end of 2011 after the council said that existing services, which had operated for 140 years, was costing 10 million. But also the problem of illegal litter is coming up as well, because that's now costing the council a million euros a year. So who's going to be collecting the rubbish this time next year? We don't know, because they're not going to tell us for a little while yet.
Who knows? And I'm not going to even try and pronounce that word, so fair
play. No,
no. I never heard of it either myself. Now, another big long word, an extravaganza of fireworks at Malahide.
Well, again, this is going to be part of their Remembrance and Recognition event. It's going to be held on the evening of Friday, the 18th of March, which is going to be a bank holiday. That is all the information that Fingal County Council has released at this stage. But if they are doing a fireworks extravaganza in Malahide on that date, I will be there.
Excellent. Why not? Yeah, it sounds like something that will be very good and very worthwhile going to see. Now, the Marino Institute have hosted an innovative multicultural event.
The reason I picked this one is because we've mentioned the Marino Institute of Education on the programme before, so I thought it was about time we did. So it was held at the Nan Nagel Rice Building in the MIE on Griffith Avenue. And the fair is one of many actions taken by the Institute, as the Institute reaffirms its commitment to social justice, inclusion, sustainability, cultural diversity and transformation in Irish education. So the weeks this weekend, they had the final event on Thursday, showcased 24 nationalities and cultures, and joining the faculty, students, alumni on the day were members of over 10 international embassies from Germany, Peru, Malaysia, Saudi Arabia, Spain, Turkey and many, many more. And the fair was a culmination of a fortnight series of events of workshops on topics such as Black Studies, Traveller Voices, Trade Studies and much, much more. So congratulations, looked like a great event, saw the pictures, looked fabulous.
Brilliant. Yeah, the Marino Institute's a fantastic structure, isn't it?
Oh, it is,
really amazing if you look at
it. If you have a walk around, it's worth a walk around.
Yeah, even though it's small, you know, it's fantastic. Now, the Clean Coasts Clever Campaign, what's all that about?
This one gets a thumbs up, and you know, I think this is really a clever idea. So, the Dublin-based Clean Coast groups are calling on people on the north side to put an end to single-use plastic items they thought they couldn't live without by finding plastic-free alternatives. So the Bull Island Action Group have been tackling plastic pollution on Dublin's Dollymount Beach for over 20 years. Through their social media channels, the group has also been trying to awareness of how long plastic lasts with a series of retro rubbish items that they find on their beaches cleans. Everything from plastic bottles, wrappers, plastic dating back 30 to 50 years ago, as can be seen from the price or the expiry date on them. And the aim of the group is to highlight how plastic never dies and can take hundreds of years to biodegrade. And recent statistics show that Ireland is the number one plastic producer in the European Union, with 54 kg of plastic waste per person produced each year, as well as being the country with the fourth lowest recycling rates. So what they've done is they found bits of things on, you know, come washed up, they pick them up, and they find them from 30 years ago, and they stick up a picture, and people go, well, there you go. It hasn't changed in the last 30 years, and that's been in the sea, so we need to change on that. So they're running the campaign. It's a hashtag, Break Up With Plastic. And again, I think it's a lovely little idea just to get that idea across. So congratulations to them, and I hope people will take note and not put plastic anywhere except it shouldn't go.
Exactly, and well done to them. Now, shells are going back home, are they? Maybe.
This has been going on for a little while. So Dublin City Council is to consider a proposal from Shell Football Club to buy Talca Park and redevelop it into a multi-sport stadium. So council officials met with the Shelburne board very recently to discuss the proposal, and they will have further meetings, possibly next week, where more details on the proposals are due to be provided. So the decision by Shell marks an about turn by the club, who had signed up to the plans to share the redeveloped Dalymount Park. So the DCC statement warns that the proposals from Shelburne must not result in any financial implications for the council. So the City Council is willing to examine the proposal, they said. However, it would be based on a cost recovery model for the expenditure incurred by Dublin City Council, with a firm commitment from Shelburne FC that Tolka Park can be redeveloped in a reasonable period and adequate finances in place. So basically what happens is Dublin City Council took over Bowes Ground, they took over Tolka Park. We're going to put all the money into the Bowes, and we'll do something else with Tolka Park. Residents got together, and they formed a group called Save Tolka Park, and they were trying to get to make sure it doesn't basically get redeveloped into apartments. And so this is an about turn now by Shell, saying, you know, we're considering it. You know, then the argument comes about, you know, and in the background they're saying that, you know, the Dublin City Council are looking for 15 million for the Tolka Park, the Shells people are saying probably worth 6, it's probably in between. But then to see where the money comes from, do they have the money to do it up to the level that's required, and the money to keep it going, which as a League of Ireland club is a stretch at the minute, to be honest.
It's a challenge, yeah.
It's a challenge.
Absolutely.
But it would be great to have.
It would indeed, and nice to see it as a recreational leisure facility and not necessarily just more housing or apartments. Ken, as usual, thanks a million for looking at all those stories for us today. And we're going to take a short break now for a little piece of music. And in a moment, Sarah is going to be talking to Norma Sheehan about Shirley Valentine. Hello, Rock. Hello, all.
Strip, and my hands can't feel to grip, and my toes too numb to step. Wait only for my boot heels to be wandering. I'm ready to go anywhere, I'm ready for to fade onto my dancing spell my way. I promise to go under it. Hey, Mr. Tambourine Man, play a song for me. I'm not sleepy yet, there ain't no place I'm going to.
Near FM, you're very welcome back to the Week in Review with myself, Sarah Birmingham, Declan Roth and Ken Kilbride. Well, Norma Sheehan, as we mentioned earlier, is a personal favourite of mine. She has to be one of the leading, funniest and most versatile, it has to be said, actresses in Ireland today, with a phenomenal list of credits including in Bridget and Eamon, Moon Boy, The Cripple of Innes Man, Angela's Asses and lots more. She's now gearing up to breathe life into an exciting and triumphant lead role, which is indeed Willie Russell's iconic Shirley Valentine. Trapped in a dreary marriage and humdrum life, Shirley has resorted to having full-blown conversations with her kitchen wall, and that iconic piece of course changes when her friend asks her to go on holidays to Greece and she sets out on a humorous voyage of discovering herself all over again. And no doubt something that will resonate closely with audiences at the moment as well, you'd have to think. I'm delighted to be joined on the line now by Norma to find out a little bit more about what's in store and how it's all been going so far. Thanks so much, Norma, for joining us. And yeah, I know I heard you speak with RTE a couple of weeks ago about it, what it was like to be back performing five theatres. You've taken Shirley to some of Ireland's great venues around the country over the last few weeks. What has it been like? How has it been received?
Well, it's the most, one of the most amazing plays ever. Before it was ever a film, it was actually a Tony Award winning play. Pauline Collins did it on stage first. So, I mean, I've been gifted just a dream job, to be honest. And people are coming back two and three times. When we did it in the Gaiety the last time, there was one woman who came back three times. She came back with her kids another time and her mum another time, and she went with friends the first time. It's like, wow. And she goes, it's just so perfect for now, for getting out of the house and stop talking to the wall, and to give you kind of, I don't know, a bit of hope again.
I think we've all spent time probably talking to the wall and the floor and the ceiling and anything else that'll listen to us over the last 2 years. But particularly with Shirley Valentine, she seems to really have that kind of resonance with Irish audiences. Like, what is it about the role for you that kind of really makes it stand out like that?
Well, everyone can relate to it. Like, Willie Russell, he came on, he's a writer, he wrote Blood Brothers and Educated Reach and all of them, and he came on a Zoom with me, and he was very happy, you know, to telling him that we're taking it to the Gaiety, and Drieg Blanchard, I'm doing the 32 Counties of Ireland, but like, it's, and he was saying, well, so he said, make it Irish. So I agreed with him, and it's now kind of, he helped us change about, I suppose, 100 or 200 of the words to localise it. And he's loving it, and he's going to come over and see it. So how does it resonate with people now? I suppose I'm in my 40s. My teenagers treat me like a doormat, and that's normal. Like, that's not expected anymore. I was a terror myself. So, you know, it's about finding purpose. Shirley had a clean job, and her husband wasn't battering her or anything. They just reached a point where they couldn't stand the sight of each other, which, I'm sorry, but that's normal in marriage. And it's about finding hope again. And she says to her husband when he rings to say, get home here and stop arsing around in Greece, she's like, the only holiday romance Joe has had is with myself, and I actually like myself. And she said, I can't come back because that woman isn't needed anymore. St. Joan of the fitted units isn't needed anymore. So she's hoping that Joe will kind of start using all the unused life he has as well. And I mean, aside from all the deep stuff I'm discussing here, it is a laugh a minute. Like, she can't, she calls it the clitoris. Like, she goes on about her friend the clitoris. She doesn't even know how to pronounce it. And just, what else does she go on about? Oh yeah, she's like, I don't even like sex. It's a bit overrated, like done stores, a lot of pushing and shoving, and you come up with very little in the end. Like, the one-liners are fantastic. Yeah.
The writing in it is just stellar like that. I think there's an unvarnished honesty to it, which, you know, I'm sure that's part of what the appeal there is with it. But for you, as a one-woman show like that, and you know, really kind of slipping into that role and taking it all around the country, what is it like to perform as Shirley then?
You see, I love a challenge, and to be fair, sir, I think I'm brilliant at everything. So, like, I'm just back from jogging for an hour, right? I haven't jogged in weeks, and I just thought, you know what, I'm going to go for it. Shirley had a heart attack, but like, I think Shirley's had a bit of an impact on me, actually, because like, I'm putting more things on my bucket list. And my mother died 3 years ago, and I remember being in the hospital with her when she was, you know, told she was going to die and stuff. And she was like, Norma, it's not hard to die when you know you've lived. And she had a load of ailments all her life, but she just turned up to the opening of an envelope with a done up to the nines, even if she was on an oxygen tank. She was a terror, like, she'd break you, but like, she, this spirit of like, you know, what kills us, what Shirley says, a lot of us die long before we're dead, and what kills us is the weight of all the unused life we carry around with us. And it's so true. Like, if we don't get up, and I'm not saying we need to go change the world and become the president, but just, geez, go for a walk, or like, you know, plan something, be the one to plan it in an adventure, or, you know, we just have all lost our spirit for gusto, and we need it back, because, I mean, Jesus, between world wars and pandemics, it's tough.
Well, you said it, yeah, but gosh, I think that's a great example now of getting up and going for the jog and going for it anyway. You know, we don't have to kind of, as you say, achieve perfection. It's better to just start somewhere like that. You know, I think your own career, obviously, I think it's Damo and Ivor, I suppose, that I would have first seen you in personally, but course, taking on some fantastic roles and really wide ranging, between Moon Boy and then performing the Crypt of the Innocent Man, obviously. But as an actress, you know, which is it the kind of that holds the greatest spark in you, I suppose? Is it the set or the screen or the stage, or, you know, what is it like to kind of be kind of taking a theatre show or in country now, I suppose?
As I said to Willie Russell, the writer, last October, like, getting up and doing that monologue in the Gaiety was just, like, mind-blowing. And they're having us back in 2 weeks' time, back in the Gaiety for another week. But, so that was massive, playing to that many people. And, it, you know, they're having us back so well. But, next week I'm down at the Pavilion, and, like, one of the shows is sold out already, and there's a matinee left, there's a few seats left in a couple of the other shows. But, like, Grey is sold out. Like, the buzz of getting up on stage doing live stuff, and the audience are the other actor in it, because every show is different. Yes, The Wall is obviously my colleague as well, but the audience are massive in it. And I love filming as well. Like, when I did The Clinic years ago, that was my first filming job, and I played a crazy receptionist with Amy Huberman. But then I went on to do Moon Boy, was brilliant. Chris O'Dowd had me in that, and Damon Ivor was a lovely role, and Bridget Naiman with Jennifer Burnett. Like, I get to play the crazies, but I get to play the straight stuff as well, because I'm a bit of a, like, I would be a walking tragic comedy there, to be honest. So, like, I get to play straight stuff then in Dead Still. I did a lovely part in that, and so I'm great. I'm tipping along, like, but there's nothing like live stage. I gave it up for 12 years when my twins were born, and then I had another kid quickly after that, and theatre wouldn't pay your childminder, so it just wasn't possible. Whereas Shirley is a different, it's more a commercial play rather than going to kind of a small theatre and hoping to play to 20 people. That will not fund your life, so that wasn't an option for me anymore, so I had to give up that sort of theatre. But then I came back to The Cripple of the Innish Man and The Gaiety and Angela Zasher's and Musical and all this. So I can do theatre I just won't take a job if it's not covering my kids and my costs. It just doesn't make sense.
I think it's great honesty in that as well, Norma. And I think hope and a little bit of guidance maybe for people out there, you know, who might be interested or might be trying to kind of break that scene, as you say, like that, you know, that you have to kind of think of yourself in the mix of all that as well, you know, in all the madness. And speaking about madness and speaking about your other role as a mother of three teenagers as well, I mean, I don't know how you get to kind of fit it all in and organise it all, but another role that people might have seen you in was, of course, winning Celebrity Ireland's Fittest Family with the girls. What was that like?
I was very proud of that. So that was 3 years ago, and they were too young to do it, but I got my cousin and my sister and my other cousin, and we won 10 grand for Cork Cancer Support, Art House in Cork. And my mother was dying at the time. She stayed alive on oxygen to watch it on New Year's Eve 3 years ago, and then she passed away like 2 days after. It was like the hospital going, why is she's not registering on the breathing, and there's no, like, she was skin and bone, and they were going, how is she still alive? And she's like, I don't know what you're talking about. She hung out to watch it on, and the 10 grand being presented to Art House, and then literally just went, I ran out of here now. And she headed off. She had a big funeral before the pandemic, which was great. She got that. She got a Jack Lynch level funeral. She's looking on bubble mother. But no, Celebrity for the Family was brilliant, because we expected to lose. There were three girls on the team, so we hadn't the brawl of the other crowd, but we managed to hang over the lifty longer than the others.
Then, well done, fair play.
Yeah, and then in the final, you know, running up that big black yoke at the end, didn't one of the men on the other team, he lost his weight, and he couldn't balance over these nets. So we caught up with them, passed them out, and won the money.
That's the bottom line, really, isn't it? Yeah. And I mean, I'm sure all of that training, that the stamina, the jogging that you're getting doing now as well, all of that no doubt helps and fuels some of the energy needed to take on the role of Shirley then, and bring shows like that around the country every weekend. You're really kind of tour de force.
By the way, I'm leaving now. I'm going to be driving up to Cavan tonight. If anyone knows anyone in Cavan, there's 30 seats left tonight. So ring anyone in Cavan. There's 30 seats left to be sold, and I don't think there should be any empty seats when it's that good. No. I know it's selling brilliantly up there, but there is 30 seats left. So if you know anyone in Cavan town, tell them get out, stop talking to the wall, and get down to the town hall tonight.
Stop talking to the wall, person's wall, and I think you can't give them clearer direction than that, really. And absolutely, no, we certainly encourage anyone. I know you're taking it back to Dublin next weekend, which will be plenty of audiences really building for that, and I'm sure great interest there. But yeah, if anyone does know anyone in Cavan, I'd say spread the word loud and clear. Yeah, and in terms of that show next weekend, then I guess this is the one that might be closest to some of our listeners here. Where is the best place to go to book tickets for that then, to head along, and maybe just the other shows then around the area as well? Are you going to be back in the Gaiety with us?
So the Pavilion's next weekend, and I live near enough to Dunleary, so I think that's why it's selling out. Sure, everyone who bumps into me, they're mortified they have to buy a ticket, but the Gaiety is selling well as well. That's the 29th of March, and it's doing well. And Dríocht is actually the 11th and 12th of March, so that's the week after next, and that's one of those shows is nearly gone, but the other one has a good few tickets left. So there's, it's the popular times are selling really quick, and then like a matinee, there might be a few left, or a Tuesday or something like that. So that's it.
Go for it. Well, that's it. Absolutely. Check out. You've plenty of options there between Dríocht, as I say, and the Gaiety performance and the Pavilion, of course, next weekend. Look, I can't wish you the best enough of luck with it. I know it's been an absolutely whirlwind last 2 years, as you said. It probably all kicked off with you, with the Celebrity Fitness family, and of course, you know, the commitment.
Where do you live yourself, Sarah? Where do you live yourself?
I'm then in Wexford myself. I'm involved with the team here, but I'm in Wexford myself, so hopefully we'll get to see you back again here soon too. But
we're doing New Ross, or we're doing the Spiegel or something like that, so we might be down
for that.
Yeah, brilliant.
Looking forward to it. Thank you so much, Norma. I think we could chat all day. There's so much that you've done, and loads to look forward to, and just love the role of Shirley. So the very best of luck with it, and have a lot of fun along the way too, and spread the word to anyone in Cavan, Dublin, Wexford. You're on that national tour de force at the moment, and hopefully it will go absolutely fantastically. Look, thank you so much.
Thanks a million.
Yes, Sarah, it's a fantastic movie. It's a fantastic play. Really, what the nation probably needs, as you said there in the middle of all that.
Yeah, well, I think Norma put it very well. I think we probably all found ourselves talking to the wall a little bit. And like that, yeah, we have to kind of maybe try and get back to a little bit of living now. So, I think that'd be a great one to check out. And lots of places all around the country, and the Gaiety as well coming up, and Dríocht as well, to go and check it out. So enjoy.
And maybe even Wexford again.
Hopefully they won't forget
you. Hopefully they won't forget you. Okay, you're going to stay with us, because after the break, Sarah will be back to have a chat through other events that are happening locally over the next little while. And now that we're coming to the end of mask wearing and everything, and almost at the end of the emergency phase, as Dr. Hula had put it, of COVID, all these events are now coming back live, although there is sometimes a little bit of a blend there. And we also will be chatting with Joe Brady. Ken is going to talk to Joe Brady, who is a geographer, and he's formerly the head of UCD School of Geography, Planning and Environmental Policy, and he was also Dean of Arts. So a really interesting chat coming up at about 1:15 in relation to that. And we'll squeeze in the jobs and volunteering opportunities. There are 38 requests for volunteers and 346 job offers this week, would you believe, taken from the activelink.ie website. So all of that to come in the second half of Week in Review after 1:00.
90.3.
This is Near FM. Near FM.
Join Joe Keegan for the Groovalicious Radio Show every from 6:30 p.m. bringing you all things soulful, soul classics, funk, disco and soulful house every second Saturday from 6:30 p.m. here on Near FM.
Horselips to hair squid, rock to rap, punk to pop, and all genres in between. Join me, Michael Sullivan, every Saturday night between 8:30 p.m. and 10 p.m. for Irish to the Core. I'll be playing the best in Irish contemporary music from the past to the present. So don't forget, every Saturday night between 8:30 p.m. and 10 p.m. Irish to the Core on Near 90.3 FM.
Racism is wrong and unjust. We stand for an Ireland where we all take part in the fight for equality and equal rights
in housing, jobs, welfare,
justice,
law,
health
and education.
Let's treat each other with love, respect and dignity, regardless of our nationality and ethnicity.
We stand for equality for all, one human race,
one world,
one love.
INAR, the Irish Network Against Racism, encourages you to report all racist incidents to ireport.ie, the online racist incident reporting system.
Near FM, supporting equality.
90.3. This is Near FM.
And welcome back to the programme. Welcome back to the Week in Review. I'm Declan Ralph. I'm here with Sarah Birmingham and Ken Kilbride. Don't forget, if you want to get involved in the show or you'd like me to feature something on the programme, well, you can get in touch right now by text while we're on the air. The text line is open, 087 69 44 500. That's 087 69 44 500. Or you can get in touch at any time on Twitter at NearFM at Declan Ralph. Hashtag Week in Review. Local events with Sarah Birmingham. Welcome back, Sarah. What's your mother tongue?
What's your mother tongue? Yeah. Well, this is all about a new festival in Dublin. I mean, I believe it's been running the last couple of years, but getting bigger and better every year, and it celebrates diverse languages through the arts. Mother Tongues has as its mission to showcase the country's rich artistic and cultural tapestry and to connect people through the power of language. And as you know, there are so many different languages. We spoke about Shirley Valentine there, and the Liverpool accent there, the Irishization of it, and cultures and different diverse languages and backgrounds around Dublin and across the country now. And that's what Mother Tongues is all about. It's encouraging everyone, as we say, to colour outside the lines, to learn something new and to have a little bit of fun along the way while celebrating their mother tongue and the rich kaleidoscope of languages spoken in Ireland today. The festival has been taking place, as I said, over the it's been taking place over the last couple of years, but particularly in 2022, it's been taking place over the last few days in Dublin. There's been workshops, panel discussions, exhibitions, dance, music, art, storytelling, lots more too, and it all reaches its finale today. There's particularly a lot of activity centred around the Tala area there today. I know they've been over in Blanchardstown as well. So if you're looking for an afternoon or an evening of entertainment for all ages, then it might be well worth making the trip over. I know some of the things they have there today include calligraphy workshops, the Discovery Gospel Choir, and a musical tapestry event as well. Just three of the events taking place there. So you can check out all the information on that at mothertonguesfestival.com.
Excellent. Now, back again for another year is the DIFF, as they call it, the Dublin International Film Festival.
The DIFF, yeah. Well, I know around the rest of the country they might say hit the DIFF.
Hit the DIFF, that's a whole different connotation, yeah.
A slightly different context in Dublin, because it is indeed the Virgin Media Dublin International Film Festival, one of the most iconic events in Dublin's cultural calendar every year, and it's now back after a tumultuous 2 years, like everything else, back in full sight now for film fans of all tastes to go and explore and enjoy. And it really does celebrate cinema experiences in all of the different forms they can take, from documentaries to features to short films to minority cinema and lots more too. In addition to a cinema offering and a vast cinema offering, they also have a host of leading industry professionals who've come to town to run workshops, give talks and offer inspirational advice to budding film industry talent. The programme for today includes a mix of online and offline events. There's a screening in Cineworld at 4 p.m. of a documentary on the trailblazer and culinary superstar of the 1950s, Julia Child. There's a Lighthouse cinema screening then this evening of the Irish vampire comedy Let the Wrong One In. And they also this afternoon have an online Irish screenwriting panel discussion, which might be of specific interest to people who are interested in writing and the whole area of writing for film. Some of the festival events then taking part as part of this year's festival include Conversations with Friends. We'll see Lenny Abrahamson, him of Normal People, he's the director behind many successful series like that, and also set to be the director of the upcoming television series of Conversations with Friends based on that Sally Rooney novel. And he's going to be joined by producers to introduce fans to the process of filming what is one of the most highly anticipated TV shows and to enjoy and to check out, and the best thing to do is to hit the diff, specifically diff.ie, for all the information, the full programme and to book your tickets there.
Anish Sarah, Lamish Jocks, Shocked in the Gaelga.
Shocked in the Gaelga. Well, Kathinga will say maybe Koiki Snow, me in the Gaelga, meeting month, because it has turned into a little bit more of the month of celebrating Irish than just the week. But never let that get in the way of having a good time. And certainly St. Patrick's Day might be a number of weeks away yet, although just to diverge slightly, I was in a workshop this morning in Wexford where they're busy making some of the fantastic colourful props that will feature in this year's Dublin St. Patrick's Day parade. So it's certainly on the way, but the beginning of Shocked in the Gaelga happens this coming Tuesday, the 1st of March. And it's the perfect opportunity to get a head start then on trying out your Christmas muffin in advance of that new long weekend on the way. This is the biggest celebration of the Irish language in Ireland and around the world, and there are lots and lots of ways to get involved. Ambassadors with the campaign this year include the broadcaster Cormac O'Hara, the international rugby player Semi Naupu, and TikTok star the Kerry Cowboy, aka Shane O'Sullivan. There'll be content across social media, events taking place across Ireland over the next few weeks too, and you can also log your own Shocked in the Gaelga event by going to snag.ie. So Shocked in the Gaelga, snag.ie, and as they say, win three loss, that is, try it out.
Vin Trilas, Lála Fordrick on Farade, lots of things happening back for 2022 that haven't been around for a couple of years, so it'll be a great festival and celebration of Ireland, I'm sure.
Absolutely.
Now, David Doherty is going to give us a laugh at the Dríocht.
He is someone else that I have to mention for praise, I think, Declan, because I remember on the night actually that the Capitol building in Washington was stormed last January, and we were in the height of level 5 pandemic restrictions. Myself and my friends watched a David O'Doherty gig presented from his living room over, I think it was Google Meet or one of these platforms, and it is fantastic and refreshing and normal, I suppose, in some sense, to see him coming back now playing a live gig in Dríocht in Glasgow, and lots to look forward to there. As he puts himself, he has now got, after the last 2 years, all the misplaced confidence of a waiter with no writing pad. Is he going to remember how to perform live, how to put on the show? He'll just have to go along to find out. There's going to be chat. As he says himself, there might be some apologising. I'm not too sure for what. Possibly linked to all the tunes that he's about to bash out on a glued-together plastic keyboard from 1986. But then that is just part of the charm of David O'Doherty, and you have to head along to find out more about that. You can book your tickets by going to the What's On tab at dríocht.ie, dríocht.ie.
Now, I think we've just about time to squeeze in the story or the event that you want to tell us about. The Dublin Ukulele Collective are gathering at Whelan's. That sounds really interesting.
Dublin, yeah, and thankfully they do emphasise that there's audience participation here, because I'm not too sure if I'd be able to go along to see a ukulele collective without, I don't know if it'd be clapping or singing or dancing or what, but this is a 30-piece ukulele band from around Dublin, and they'll just say they have a licence to entertain, and they are gearing up to play Whelan's next Sunday evening, the 6th of March, and they're sure to go down the streets with music fans of all ages and tastes. Their members range in age right up to over 70s. There's a huge range, and that's reflected too in the diverse repertoire of songs, which includes, they have everything from choir harmonizers to middle-aged rockers to electric teenagers, and you can expect upbeat fun and rhythm, a lot of rhythm with harmonies and a little nostalgia thrown in there for good measure too. The tunes from artists ranging from Elbow to Talking Heads to Bob Dylan to Amy Winehouse to Jason Mraz and more. And as you said, they are very much a band that encourages audience participation, so don't expect to go home without having played your own little part in the show as well. Tickets for the performance are priced at €15, and they are available now from Whelans.ie.
I can't get my head around like 30 piece ukulele band. What is the sound going to be like?
It's a vision, isn't it? Of all ages and backgrounds, and everyone from across Dublin, and all belting it out on the ukulele songs. I mean, taking on songs like that from Elbow, Amy Winehouse, on the little ukuleles, and having all the audience joining them in too, I think it sounds like a treat.
And great value at €15 for sure.
Absolutely.
Whelans.ie has all the details there. Sarah, thanks a million for the events, and thanks earlier for chatting to Norma about Shirley Valentine. So we'll say goodbye, Wall, and goodbye, Rock. Thanks. We'll talk to you next week.
Say goodbye, Declan, and goodbye, Ken, too, from me, and more to come, I'm sure, from you both. But chat to you next week. Thanks a million, Sarah.
So, still to come, we're going to take a break for a short piece of music, a piece of music that you will definitely recognise, and you'll wonder, where have I heard that, and who is the performer? But you'll figure that out yourself, I'm sure, by the time we get to the end of it. And after that, Ken is going to have a chat with Joe Brady. He's a geographer and formerly the head of the UCD School of Geography, Planning and Environmental Policy. And they're going to talk about Dublin between 1970 and 1980. And I'm sure it'll be a really interesting chat. So all of that to come here after this short piece of music. And we'll see you after that.
Summer, you can see it fading fast. So you grab a piece of something that you think is gonna last. Well, you wouldn't even know a diamond if you held it in your hand. The things you think are precious, I can't understand.
Are you reeling in the years, stowing away the time? Are you gathering up the tears? Have you had enough of mine? Are you reeling in the years, throwing away the time? Are you gathering up the tears? Have you had enough of mine?
You've been telling me you're a genius since you were 17. In all the time I've known you, I still don't know what you mean. The weekend at the college didn't turn out like you planned. The things that pass for knowledge, I can't understand.
Are you reeling in the years, throwing away the time? Are you gathering up the tears? Have you had enough of mine? Are you reeling in the years, throwing away the time? Are you gathering up the tears? Have you had enough of mine?
This is Near FM on 90.3. Hi there, I'm Ken Kilbride, and with Declan Ralph and Sarah Birmingham, you're very welcome back to the programme. Don't forget, if you have anything you would like us to feature, you can contact us live on air at text 087 6904 4500. That's text 087 6904 4500. Or email us anytime at all on weekinreview@near.ie. Joe Brady is a geographer and former head of UCD's School of Geography, Planning and Environmental Policy, and also as Dean of Arts. He is with Ruth McManus, a series editor of the Making of Dublin series. In the eighth of this series, he looked at Dublin 1970 to 1990, a city transformed. So good afternoon, Joe. How are you? Very welcome to the programme.
Ken, thank you very much for having me. It's a pleasure to talk to you.
Indeed. Just before we maybe get on to number eight, could you tell us about 1 to 7 and what's involved in those?
Well, what we've been trying to do over the past 20 years, and it's scary to say that,
yes,
over the past 20 years, is to try and get a sense of how the city of Dublin's landscape developed. There's lots of good histories out there about the people in the city, but this is about the landscape. This is about the city that you go through, the city that you use on a daily basis, that you walk through, you drive through, that you shop there. And we've been working our way through the various time periods to try and get a sense of the things that were important, the forces that shaped them, and of course the people that were behind those forces. So that's really what it's all about.
So when you talk about 1970 to 1990, a city transformed, I must say it sounds like a specialized subject on Mastermind. What were the big forces driving change in that period of time?
It's a city which we would now recognize. I suppose it's the putting the shape on many things that we would now take for granted. During that time period, there were big things and there were small things going on. This is the time period when the Liffey stink is finally sorted out. This is the time period when we start getting worried about air pollution. The motorway question running through the city is finally sorted out. This is when suburban shopping centres really arrive for the first time. And the big thing, I suppose, from the city centre's point of view, this is the time period when the decay and dereliction of the city centre was finally addressed. So there's all sorts of different things going on, but they're really shaping the city that you will see today. If you go anywhere in the city today, the kind of forces that were happening in the 70s and 80s are the ones that have shaped it.
So, I mean, was it population changes that were forcing it? Simple geography, obviously, we couldn't expand to the east, so we went to the west. What was happening in that period of time to bring about all these changes?
It was a combination of the fact that people were moving to suburbs. The city was becoming much more suburbanized. The middle classes had long since decided that the city center wasn't for them, and the suburbs had been developing really since the 1950s. Dublin Corporation, with its rehousing, was building further and further from the city because that's where the land was. So the city was getting spread out. Now, combine that with changes in how business is being done.
Yeah.
That's, things are moving so that suburban locations are now being recognized as being far more efficient and far more effective than city locations. And this starts off back in the 1950s with the arrival of the supermarket. But it really takes off at the beginning of the 1970s with the arrival of the shopping center, suburban shopping center, and then we get the suburban business park, and then we get the remaining industries from the city center all moving to the suburbs. So in a relatively short period of time, you move from having a city where there's a, you know, a single city center, and you talked about going to town, to a city where there's choice, and people are starting to, you know, people are getting more and more cars, and people are becoming more and more flexible, and people are starting to use the city in different ways. So this is the kind of thing that's driving it.
When I say, forgive the bad pun, but, you know, driving, if you talk about cars, was it a chicken and egg thing in that, you know, you now live so far out you needed a car, or was it, and we can now sort of begin to afford cars, which we couldn't in the past?
It's, you're absolutely right. It's a chicken and egg thing, and certainly, you're living out in suburbs, you need a car. People were starting to be able to afford it.
Yeah.
So it's, and that of course reinforced it. Because if you now have a population which has increasing car ownership, you as a developer can start thinking about building your large supermarket out in a suburban area where people are going to come to you by car. You know, you wouldn't have been contemplating that before. If your people are living in suburban areas, then you have to start thinking about where your labour force is there. So, for example, you get, you know, Jacobs moving out of Dublin city centre in the 70s. And one of the factors that pushes them out is that their labour force is out in the suburbs. But it's only one factor, because out of the suburbs, you can buy land cheaply. You can have a single storey operation. In the city centre, it's multi-storey. Your trucks can move in and out with relative ease. The centre is jammed. So it's all these kinds of things coming together.
So literally, say the city still is jammed.
Yeah.
Nothing's much changed there, to be honest.
True.
So just in terms of what you're saying there about that, you know, and I'm just looking through what you were saying is that, you know, in that period, you know, they had seen the need for change. Maybe not much happened in the 70s, but there was a big change towards the latter section of the 80s. So what happened then and what drove that change?
Well, one of the things that people may well remember about the city in the 70s and 80s, that if you went into the city centre, you immediately saw the amount of dereliction that there was. And particularly if you went along the quays, you saw really a city which was in decay. Not surprisingly, you find that, you know, the a magazine like the Art Review producing a single issue in 1974 called A Future for Dublin, and pretty much there's a question mark at the end of that, because there's a lot of decay going on. Everybody's talking about something must be done. And it's only in the middle 1980s when there's a sudden realization that a particular package of incentives is going to produce a very rapid transformation that you get this change. Now, not everybody likes what happened, and not everybody likes the urban landscape that emerged. But within 10 years, most of the visible decay in the city centre is gone. And, you know, the city that you will walk along today has appeared. And it's the fact that it happened so fast that's remarkable. It's done within 10 years. And I'd go back to the point to say, not everybody likes it. Not everybody likes the design. Not everybody likes the quality of the build. But nonetheless, comparing what was there with what's there now, and you can see the difference. And one of the things that I'd say about the book is that what we've always tried to do with the books is to illustrate them to the greatest extent possible. So there's a lot of photographs in the book which show you how it was. And I think it's instructive to be reminded of just how bad the place looked when you're looking at how it looks now.
But obviously just within that, you know, this is book 8, so I presume you're going to be writing book 9, which will probably bring us up to the current. So will we look back fondly on the developments in the 70s and the 90s, or did we get it right, or could we have done it better?
I think we will look back with mixed views.
Yeah,
I think we will look back and say, yes, they solved a problem at that particular time. Could they have been done better? Certainly they could have been done better. But there'd been so much dithering about over the past, you know, 30 or so years about doing something about it, that it was probably good that it happened. But I suppose the way you'd be saying, will they still be around in 100 years' time? I doubt that they would have the same degree of affection then as the older landscapes may well have. I can see us pretty well changing them sometime in the future. But for the moment, they're grand. And for the moment, they're fulfilling a need. So it's going to be a mixed assessment, I reckon.
Just to wrap up very quickly, you know, thanks for that. Very quickly, you mentioned it already. We solved the stink in the Liffey. How did we do that?
Yeah, well, this is one of those wonderful stories that where the everybody knew there was a problem, but everybody wanted somebody else to do it. The realization was that the stink in the Liffey was not caused by sewerage. It was caused by the after effects of centuries of sewerage falling, getting into the Liffey. So the mud in the Liffey stank.
Okay.
And the question was, would somebody not clean it out? But Dublin Corporation said it's the Port and Docks problem. And the Port and Docks people said, no, it's your problem. And they said, you're responsible for the bed of the Liffey. No, but you're responsible for the walls. It took the guts of 30 years before there was finally an acceptance by Dublin Corporation that the Port and Docks were never going to do the job. And so there are these marvellous photographs in the Corporation Archive, in the City Council Archive, of these bulldozers down on the bed of the Liffey, shoving all this mud, which is then being put into trucks and taken away. And that's what solved it, finally. It's getting rid of the mud from the bed of the Liffey. But the photographs are worth looking at. And if you go to the City Council's website, there's a great selection of them there. You couldn't believe that you could have bulldozers on the bed of the Liffey.
I say that's something worth looking at. So, yeah, well, really, thanks very much for that. I mean, it really, really sounds interesting. And I'm sure It sparked an awful lot of interest in people that are, you know, listening into this. So if someone was interested in getting more information about this one and the rest of the series, where would you find the books and that sort of information? The
simplest thing to do is to go, there's a website, www.dublinhistory.ie, one word, dublinhistory.ie. It'll tell you all about the series. The books are published by our partners in this over the past 20 years, Four Courts Press, and it'll tell you all about the books and tell you how about going and getting them, hopefully.
If you could just maybe just repeat that website address for us again.
Oh, it's www.dublinhistory, one word, .ie.
Great. Thank you very much. I really appreciate that, Joe.
Thanks, Ken. It's been a pleasure.
Now, I want to let you know about some jobs and volunteering opportunities that are available locally. I take these from the activelink.ie website, where there are literally hundreds of opportunities. Now, this week, in fact, there's 38 requests for volunteers and 346 job offers. So the volunteering opportunity first, Children in Hospital Ireland are currently looking to expand their team of Just Ask volunteers, who provide a much needed service of providing a friendly welcome and support for children and their families when they arrive at Children's Health Ireland at Crumlin. Now, families, as you know, travel from all over Ireland to attend Crumlin Hospital with their sick children, and they can arrive exhausted from their long journeys, stressed from trying to find some parking and worried about finding their way to their appointment. So this is where the volunteers help. The volunteer role will appeal to people who are energetic, proactive, approachable, friendly, enjoy engaging with children and can work as part of a team. And also, you need to be comfortable in a busy, sensitive and diverse environment. If that's something that interests you, to register your interest, well, you can email Emma, and it's emma@childreninhospital.ie, and just pop Just Ask in the subject line there. Now, the job opportunity today, established back in 1969, AINTIS, the National Adult Learning Organisation, is a non-governmental membership organisation that promotes the value of adult learning and advocates for the rights of all adults to qualify learning across the tertiary education system. And they're looking to recruit a policy and project officer based at their offices in Ranelagh. However, the role will allow for both at-home and in-office working through a hybrid work model. If you go to the ActiveLink website, the link to apply is there, and the applications must be in by the 28th of February, last day of the month. Now, that's it, believe it or not, for this week, for the Week in Review. Thanks a million to all our contributors to the programme this week. And as always, if you want to get in touch, the best way to do that is on Twitter during the week. You'll get me at NearFM, at Declan Ralph, hashtag Week in Review. That's it. So from Sarah, Ken and myself, Declan Ralph, we'll all be back at the same time, 12:30 next Saturday lunchtime. See you soon on the radio. Bye for now. Bye bye.